This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Well, it's the weekend, my good friends. I really like Mondays. That's my new mantra. I love Mondays because, well, it's a bull market. When you work on Bain Wall Street, that's the type of words we use, bull and bear. What does it mean? Well, bull market, market is pointing higher. Bear market, bears angry, scrapping. So if you read the folklore on bull and bear market, it was actually an unfair fight between a bull and a bear. The bear was tied up to a pole. The bull and the bear would fight, but of course, being that the bear was tied up, he was handicapped. And well, the market's sort of that way too. It's not handicapped per se, but recessions handicap the economy, but they end. And the bulls do win over time. Market does go higher over time. Just look at the history, look at the charts. Lower left to upper right. And that's why, well, I remain optimistic about the future, despite all of the negative headlines, and they're always going to be there. You just look beyond and look at the direction of the market and get, I think, much better clues. But, you know, as Jack and I help you build wealth, again, you got to work, save, invest, repeat. And then once you're retired, you get to play, spend, invest, and repeat. Play, spend, invest, repeat. That's, I don't know if that's a better part of the cycle, but it certainly is a key part, harvesting your wealth. But what we don't want is to have some, what should I, how should I phrase this? Scumbag? Can I say that on radio? Yeah, I'm going to say that. Some scumbag defrauding you of your wealth. I have a number of clients who know firsthand, family members or themselves who have been victims of fraud. So much so, one of my clients who has a credit line on their home, it's never used. All of a sudden, they look at a statement and they have a $250,000 debit and they flipped, rightly so. And they went down to the bank and said, what gives? And they said, well, someone came in with a blank check. They signed your signature and they wrote $250,000 of it and the teller passed it. In this case here, the bank is on the hook. They're fine, but wow. There's a lot of different types of fraud out there. And I'll tell you, when it comes to the internet, that probably is where the next war is going to be won. And cybersecurity stocks certainly are part of our portfolio right here, right now. They're working, the likes of Zscaler or CrowdStrike. They're working, protecting your networks, protecting your intellectual property. And that's easy if you're a great big corporation. But individuals like you and I, we have to become better educated as to how to protect ourselves from the fraudsters so that they don't bamboozle you out of the money that Jack and I have helped you build over time. You do the work and we'll give you some great ideas to help maximize your opportunity. But when a fraudster comes along and defrauds you, boy, oh boy, you needn't be embarrassed by this. You need to, as soon as you realize you've been defrauded, seek some help. David Milosevic, he's a managing partner. He's been on Hi-Fi Radio many times. He is a litigation lawyer, fraud and securities litigation. I work in the securities industry, so he, in fact, would sue and challenge guys like me if I do wrong, which I will not do. Oh, mark my words, I will not do wrong. Not consciously, anyways. I'll make mistakes, but I won't do any. I won't break rules. Fiduciary duty is all important. And that's what we have at the Wolf on Bay Street, Jack and I, of course. But David, I want to thank you very much for joining us. There's a lot going on this year. I have a lot of clients who work in media, production, creation of content, and what they see coming across their desk these days is frightening because they're able to connect a few dots. Wow, here is this new creation of content that looks so real and is so easy to produce with the likes of ChatGPT to impersonate other people or to add video on top or voice on top of video and just create these images that are completely misleading and completely false but appear so real. With that note, David, welcome.
Thank you very much, Wolf. Good to see you and Jack again.
Yeah, no, Kathleen, my wife, always warns me. She said, well, if you're a total target to ChatGPT because your voice is out there so much, and so some bot, I guess, could learn my voice and then all of a sudden start calling up clients. Fortunately, they don't know who they are. Client confidentiality, important for that reason. But if they were to stumble across a list of my clients and started to program away, they could wreak havoc.
They certainly could. They certainly could. I don't know if you saw, there was a testimony before Congress, before the Financial Oversight Committee at Congress, and there was a lawyer testifying. And he had gotten a call from his son, and his son told him, hey, Dad, I was in a traffic accident. I've hit somebody. I've hired a lawyer. I'm in jail. Call the lawyer. The father, a lawyer, calls the lawyer. The lawyer tells him, you need to post bail, call the court. The court will arrange for you to post bail. He calls the court, courthouse answers. They say, sorry, it's after hours. Call the lawyer back. The lawyer will arrange it. The lawyer says, no problem, fine, I'll take the money. I'll arrange for the bail the following day. He says, go to the bank machine. I'm traveling now, so go to the bank machine, put it in my account, and I'll take care of it. Goes to the bank machine, and the moment before he's about to put it in the machine, he says, you know, let me just double check. Calls his son's phone number, and keep in mind, Jack, his son had called him telling him this. Picks up the phone, calls his son. His son's at his cottage, and he says, what are you talking about, Dad? I'm at the cottage. I don't know what you're talking about. Someone had called the son, spoken to him for a couple of minutes about some pitch for some product that he didn't want. He hung up. They got a voice print of his of his voice, called his dad using his own voice to try to scam the dad to send the money. Now, what is a person to do in a situation like that? That's how sophisticated the frauds have become.
You know, the same thing happened to my brother, who recently did pass away, God rest Russell's soul. But he got such a call about 5 years ago. And he is a average working class individual. And they were impersonating a friend of his. And fortunately, the conversation went long enough for Russell to connect that it wasn't legit. But it's frightening. It truly, truly is frightening. Let's move over to something that may be of use. Identity theft protection. What's your opinion on it? And as a Canadian, are there good vehicles to help protect your identity?
There are. I mean, essentially, they're going to be insurance policies. So you have the devil's in the details. Take a look at what's insured and the level of identity theft protection you're going to get from the payout. Some are just electronic identity theft protection, so something on your computer. Others are actually insurance policies that if your identity is stolen, they're going to pay out for whatever the amount of the fraud is. So there's a whole host of products out there on the market. It depends on which one you're talking about.
Yeah, but again, I'd be leery about this. I think most would be American products. So as a Canadian, insurance legislation is a country of origin, I believe, product. I'm insurance licensed, and I think it's provincial, isn't it, Jack? Our insurance licenses, I think, are provincial.
Your licenses are provincial.
They are provincial, correct. Yes. Do you know of any brands that Canadians can look to do some homework on?
I don't know offhand, Jack. I don't know any brands offhand. Sorry,
Wolf. It's okay. No problem, Dave. Yeah. No problem. If you're just spending time with us, Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. I am Wolfgang Klein, portfolio manager, along with my partner, Jack Hartle. We're talking about fraud, identity protection, and, scumbags out there who want to bamboozle you out of your money. We're here to help you minimize the risk. David, help us out. What should a consumer do? Again, in 2024, what are the key risks and how can we protect ourselves from the fraudsters?
Well, I think still the biggest one is one that's now starting to look a little bit more old-fashioned, but works very, very well, is the text messages, the unsolicited text messages, WhatsApp messages that people are getting.
Yeah.
So at my small office, I get, on average, 40 to 50 people a week calling me. So we're talking hundreds of
people. You mean prospective clients?
Correct.
40 a week?
40 to 50 a week at my small office. Hundreds a month. And they're calling me with an identical scam. I think we once touched upon this at a previous time that I was with you. So the identical scam is someone gets a WhatsApp message, a text message saying they'd send it to you, Wolf, and it says, what's up, Jack? And you'll answer, it's not Jack, it's someone else. They'll start a conversation with you. They'll tell you about how their investments have gone so well in Bitcoin. This is generally a Bitcoin crypto scam. And they'll say, look, go on the website, and they'll take you to a legitimate crypto website, crypto.com and whatnot, and say, here's how you invest. And they'll show you, and they're going to show you returns. Now, there are fake returns that are generated. There's an app you can buy that'll generate fake returns, fake statements, and they'll show you how you're...
There's an app?
There's an app. Yeah, it's just been banned.
How's that not illegal? Yeah, okay.
It recently banned from the App Store, but you can imagine
the app has been banned from the App Store, but then new apps come to market.
Exactly right.
You got to be kidding.
No.
Wow.
And so they get the people to invest and they show them they're making good returns. They say, you know, I've got an even better site for you. Why don't you transfer from there to this other site? Again, a legitimate looking site, until you look really closely and you'll see that the IP address is somewhere centered in Malaysia or somewhere like that. You transfer it into that address and you start putting money, transfer from your bank. You start transferring money into that website. And when it's hit enough, they're going to say to you, oh, if you want to withdraw your money, send a little bit more, there are taxes and whatnot, and that's when you know the scam is near the end. It's usually when people have started to show some suspicion or whatnot, they'll give you the final, well, there's a tax bill thing. That's when people usually call me. They say, how come there's a tax bill? They may or may not pay that. The money's gone. I had a woman, she called me yesterday, and most of these are unsophisticated people. A woman, she called me yesterday. She went to the bank. She mortgaged her house. She got $900,000 mortgage on her home. Older woman, almost retired, and money is gone. I can't do anything to help.
$900,000.
Not to mention the cash she gave. She's already a few hundred thousand dollars in on the cash. $900,000 on the house, mortgage to the hilt, money's all gone. I can't do anything. If we have time, I'll tell you a little bit more about how the scams work and the criminal gangs that organize them, but that money is now gone. 40 to 50 a week, Jack.
That is unbelievable. David Milosevic, managing partner, Milosevic & Associates. He's a fraud and securities lawyer. You know, lately in Toronto, there has been a complete epidemic of home invasions and robberies. It's been frightening, certainly in my neighborhood. I hear it throughout the city. And I was told by one real estate agent, in fact, it's not locals doing it. It's actually some migrating people coming up from the south who do it every year, and they just migrate from town to town, wreak havoc with it, and then move on. And, of course, it's car theft. And they're saying with the technology, key fobs, it can be easily replicated, and as such, stealing cars has never been easier. And, of course, often in your car, you leave all kinds of personal information, which can really compound the problem. Again, you're a fraud and securities lawyer, but I'm just curious in terms of these types of criminal activities. It's, you know, there's more and more crime. What can you say about that?
Sure. Well, there's a ton on there. And as you said, Wolf, it's very easy. They drive by the neighborhoods with a little antenna sticking out the car window. The antenna picks up the fobs. The fobs, any car that you see that might be triggered, you go for it. If it's in the garage, you leave it. If it's in the driveway, you take it. And what's happening in our locality is all of these, as you probably know, are ending up at the Port of Montreal.
Yep.
They're loaded onto containers. Off they go overseas. And we'll talk about that a little
bit
more.
No, that's good. Because I heard a story. Zach Kim, our key partner at the Wolf on Bay Street. Zach does such a good job, doesn't he, Jack?
Absolutely.
No, he told us a great story. It was an unbelievable story where a friend of his car was stolen from Montreal. And he actually left a bag tag, an Apple. What are those bag tags called? Bag tags, right?
AirTag.
An AirTag. Left an AirTag in his car. I think by chance. And all of a sudden, he was tracking the movement of his car, and it quickly ended up on a container. And it almost traveled the world, the darn thing, but ended up on a container. And I don't know what country it ended up in, but the local authorities, because the container had a seal on it, they couldn't open the container to verify what was inside it. Because of the seal on the container.
Yeah, well, look, I think if we look at the issue, whenever you have a big, large-scale problem like that, you look at where the bottleneck is in creating the problem or potentially resolving the problem. Where's the bottleneck here? You can have policing out on the street, try to stop all these criminals, or you can go to the problem, which is at the port, which is the inspection regime at the port, but which creates the political issues about allowing further inspections at the port, given maybe what I will politely say
Please.
Might be the cultural issues preventing further inspections at the court, at the port.
I want to talk about that. We're going to go to a quick break. I want to talk about what you think of the cultural issues. I think it's the Hell's Angels running these ports. You tell me otherwise. Hi-Fi Radio, it's a show about money. You know, making it, saving, investing, it's all key. But when a fraudster takes it from you, not good. That's what this show is all about, helping you build wealth and hang on to it. Hi-Fi Radio each and every Saturday, 7 to 8 p.m. right here on 640 in Toronto. Do tell your friends.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Welcome back. I do love that song. Licklash. Oh, Joe Strummer is one of the greatest. Yes, that's what they should do with all those fraudsters. Make them break rock in the hot sun. Hey?
I Come agree on. With that.
Break some rock. Do that for 10 years and we'll see how many cars you key fob away from people's driveways. Friends, if you have a garage, get rid of the junk and put your asset in it. I see it all the time. I drive down the street and people open up the garage and I see boxes and hoses and crapola upon crapola, tricycles, and I see seniors walking out of the house. Like, what's with the tricycle? You know, the grandkids? No, it was theirs. They sort of threw it out. And yet they got their, I don't know, Cadillac or BMW or whatever is sitting in the driveway. Yep. And then they wonder why in the morning it's gone. Put it in the garage and close the garage. And don't flash your wealth. It's just a target. Give it to charity. Compound it. You know, take care of your family. But don't flash your wealth. It'll bite you in the butt. David, you frightened me off air. And you're just, I said, stop talking. Don't spill your popcorn in the lobby of the movie theater. Keep the popcorn for the movie. You got some good popcorn. We're talking about the ports and the bottlenecks and these cars getting swiped. And then, so I saw in the news, a bunch of Canadian cars ended up in Italy. And again, as the container was opened, the police were there. But Zach's story about that key fob following their stolen car around must have driven the owner nuts. And he had to hire not private investigators, but hire someone to actually break into the port or get into the port when they're unloading that particular container to take a picture of the vehicle so that their insurance company would pay for the vehicle. So they had to go to great lengths. I think it ended up in the United Arab Emirates somewhere, Jack.
I think it was in the Middle East, yeah.
In the Middle East.
Lots of resources, that was for sure.
Insane. So, David Milosevic, you lawyer, fraud and securities lawyer. If you need him, by the way, Milosevic and Associates is where you'll find him. Milosevic is Milosevic, Milosevic. What's going on in the ports? I always thought they were run by the gangsters, the Hells Angels, and, you know, when these ships and containers come in, they sort of put the dirty ones aside, and when the average foreman's on site, they'll say, just stay away from those. Don't worry about those. Just take care of the other ones. Those are fine. I took care of that for you already. So, like, sort of mum's the word. People work there know what's going on, I think. What do you know? Because the one in Hamilton, that's a key hub for Ontario. Obviously, the one in Montreal for the St. Lawrence, that's key. What do you know? What goes on in there?
Well, my father, back in the 80s, he had a company that supplied the ships that came into the port. So when they needed to be resupplied after a long voyage, he'd go in, and they'd take very large orders to resupply the ships. So I spent a lot of time growing up sitting on the ships with the captains from all over the world, got to know a little bit of the culture there.
Wow.
So it's an interesting world.
You've been to sea.
I've been on the ships when they're in port. I haven't been to sea.
Wow, that's gonna be cool. That'd be fun.
I don't have my sea legs.
That'd be fun to walk on one of those things.
It was very fun. It's quite a culture. There are captains from around the world at that time. Russian captains were very popular.
Huh.
So there was a lot of vodka that would go around before deals were made.
Really?
Yeah.
Like literally?
Oh, of course. But the port itself, it's a unionized environment. And in Montreal, there are various interests that are involved in the port, and I think politically the issue is to make sure that negotiations are held that don't alienate all the various interests that would have to be brought together in order to get real enforcement occurring at the port, because that's our problem. We don't have sufficient enforcement at the port. The number of containers that are actually examined or that should be examined is minuscule. It's a fraction.
What percent of containers are examined? I'm curious.
I've checked the statistics. I was actually looking at them recently. Canadian examinations are a little bit higher than some other ports, but usually somewhere in the single digits percentage, maybe 2-3%.
Containers are examined.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so there's a real problem. So if we address that issue and there's no longer the possibility to export the product, the criminal supply side dries up. It goes somewhere else.
I remember watching Gone in 60 Seconds. Nicolas Cage. You watch that movie, Jack?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, you'd love it. Watch. Have you seen it?
David? I've seen it.
Good movie, eh?
Yeah, great movie.
It's old. The 90s?
Yeah, 90s.
But it was a really, really good flick. I want to pivot over to where you opened up with your text messages. Again, off air, you're sharing some incredible content. The listener needs to hear this. So text messages. You're telling me now that there is a text message camp with kidnapped individuals programming these things and coming up with these ideas? Talk to me.
Sure. So I was wondering, I mean, I'm seeing, as I said, Wolf, so many of these coming into my small office. It's an enormous number. The text message frauds, that I explain, you get the text, they bring you into a crypto investment. Just to add insult to injury, what happens in those, after the person's defrauded, they sell the names of the victims to secondary fraudsters. I don't know why they don't do this part in-house too, but they tend to sell out the names, the lists, and they sell them to recovery firms that will call the people and tell you, look, if you give me $10,000, I'm going to get your money back. And here, in fact, is a printout of where your Bitcoin went. And since, as you know, Bitcoin is a public ledger, you can show where the money went, it looks actually really convincing. Oh, they actually know where the money is. I'll pay them, I'll get it back. That's the secondary fraud, then they're done with that person.
Oh, my God.
In any event, so I was wondering, how is it that these are so big, so widespread, and identical in nature? And I began looking at them more. And what it is right now, the main locus of activity, there are a few, but really the main one where it's become a local industry is in Myanmar and Burma, where there's a military junta that rules the country, so they make deals with the military in order to run these in the jungle. They're run by Chinese criminal organized gangs, and they are, you know, like large data centers, very modern, hundreds and hundreds of workers. The Chinese mafia, they entice workers in by advertising for all kinds of low paid wage labor around Southeast Asia. People come, they take the job. When they get there, they're essentially kidnapped. They're put into these armed, guarded facilities. And they're told, you have to defraud people in the West. Here's your list. Here's your script. Here's what you need to do. And the high performers get certain benefits and perks, eventually can buy their way out. The low performers, I don't know what they do with them. I don't have that much information about what actually happens there. And so it's an organized business generating billions and billions and billions of dollars. This is a major growth industry. And that's how they're scamming people in the West.
That's on my head spinning. My head spinning. Again, yeah. So give the listeners some real helpful points as to how they can protect themselves. Obviously, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. But
people still don't listen to that, Wolf. They don't listen to the too good to be true. I've had three or four conversations this past week talking about, I can get mortgages that are risk-free for 13, 14%. And I've talked to clients. I said, who do you think they're lending to? And this is, I'm going to say,
It's not a fraud, but it's very misleading.
So if it's too good to be true, even at a low level, like, you got to just use some common sense.
Yeah. What about something Jack and I have thought of doing, and we probably should initiate or instigate it, is the use of passwords from now on. Give a client a password, and every time we speak, just for verification purposes. And this is not new speak. It's been going on for 4 or 5 decades, but that would help, would it not?
Oh, yeah, 100%. So my closest friend, he is up at one of the big banks, VP of technology for the bank. And I was talking to him about some of the tech issues that can address the fraud. And really this simple two-factor authorization identification that we have through our phone that's really being used almost everything that you see these days,
yeah,
it's hugely preventing fraud. So just a standard two-factor authorization through your phone with a security code,
that
should be every business. I think in a few years, it's going to be considered negligent if the business doesn't have it, because the fraud is going to be so widespread now with the AI.
That AI is really, really frightening me. And again, these getting phone calls, getting video sent to you, people look like me with my voice superimposed on. It's just absolutely frightening. David Milosevic, managing partner, Milosevic and Associates. She is a fraud lawyer and a securities litigation lawyer. If you think something's up, you may want to give him a call. The one that concerns me the most, and frankly, the lion is going to be joining us next, but title fraud. People somehow pulling off that movement, getting your asset that's title free or clean, all of a sudden strapped on with a mortgage. How do they pull that move off?
That's another epidemic in Ontario.
An epidemic?
It's an epidemic.
In Ontario?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people.
Tell us.
So I've been consulted on that over the years. I've tried to take it. There was just a class action that was certified just a few days ago. On that issue. So what happens, it's really done through door-to-door sales. People will come door-to-door and they're going to sell you home equipment of various types, air conditioning equipment, water filtration systems, whatnot. So they get your signature on agreeing to it. It's a hard sell, but it sounds like a good deal. It's $5,000. You'll pay it out over time, and we're going to register something against your house in order to secure the contract. What they do, then they go and they register against your house, not the $5,000, but $50,000, $150,000. Usually they prey on older folks who the idea of even checking their title doesn't even occur to
them.
No,
of course
not. They don't even know the... I mean,
no.
I don't check my title.
I don't check my title.
And so they register the large interest on the title. If there's an attempt at a sale, something comes out. First of all, they're getting payments on that all the time and demanding payments on it all the time because the large amount of principal... obviously, it's going to take longer to pay over time than $5,000. And then if there's a sale and a death and then an estate sale, there's something registered on title that needs to be paid out. No one's challenging it. For $150,000, it's not, frankly, big enough to get a lawyer involved, really, not to mention if it's $50,000. So a lot of people are just negotiating and paying it out. There are a few companies that are particularly involved. And there are hundreds, thousands. I mean, I know of hundreds myself. I think it's probably thousands of people at this point who've been affected in Ontario.
Thousands?
Oh, yeah.
Good golly. Hi-Fi Radio. My good friends, being forewarned is being forearmed. That's why you want to listen to the show each and every Saturday on 640 Toronto. I am Wolfgang Klein, money manager, portfolio manager, along with my partner Jack Hartle, spending some time this evening with David Milosevic. We're going to stay on the theme of real estate. Frank Leo, the Lion, is going to talk to us about the market in 2024. It's going to be very, very informative. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto.
Somewhere deep inside, something's got a hold on you.
You like Little Crowded House? And it's pushing Frank Leo the Lion, broker at Frank Leo and Associates, started in the real estate market in the recession of 1990, and it's amazing. Universe sold me my first home, but that's, I think, right about when I bought my first home, and I watched it go straight down for 5 years, and I sold it at 96 at the bottom, and I moved up market. Yep, I took my loss, my friend. Jack, that's actually where I learned to take my losses. I just remember reading book after book about any asset, and you have to learn to cut losses in assets. Don't ride them down and hold them down. Trust me, it's not the thing to do. If it's not working, get out and fix the problem. Now, don't stick with a problem. Anyways, Frank Leo the Lion, it's amazing. I get lots of great research across my desk each and every morning. That's what Jack and I do. We just comb through research and charts and analyze trends to try to make our clients money, which if you go to our website, wolfgangklein.com, you'll see that we make our clients very good money. In fact, I think we rank at the top 5% of all advisors in the country based on performance. And we'll just go to the website and compare your statements to our work. And I think you're going to nod and say, wow, these guys are good. 30-year fixed mortgage rates in the United States going back to 1971, Frank. It's incredible. So in 1972, that was actually the Nifty 50 era, Jack. Sort of similar to now, eh? With the Super 7, the Magnificent 7, Nifty 50 were 50 stocks that you had to own on Wall Street. But back then, interest rates started around 8%, went to 10%, and by 1982, at 18%. You're complaining, are you? Yeah, think about 1982, 18%. And a couple years later, well, that Crowded House song came out, and interest rates fell. Yeah, Crowded House. House leagues were packed in 1982. But rates hit bottom, and that's what pushed assets through the roof. People couldn't understand, well, it's a great house. Houses always go up because houses go up. No, houses went up because interest rates went down. And, Frank, I can't tell you how frustrated I've been throughout many years speaking to people in the real estate industry, not really understanding that. And it disappointed me. You understand it. I know that. And you've always understood that. Most don't in your industry. They don't really give any credit to interest rates and how it truly affects the value of your home. Why? Because it affects the cost of money and how much you're going to have to pay on a monthly payment. But rates are going up or have gone up. The question is, what's the next move? And pause appears to be the statement, but when are they going to lower interest rates? So we have an opinion, Jack and I. Frank, what's your opinion on mortgage rates?
Well, yeah. Thank you for having me on your show.
Always.
It's a great show, and people do need financial guidance because there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and doing it on your own these days can be very dangerous financially. And interest rates are changing all the time, so that's something that's been going on for a long time. And you are correct. When they came down, prices went up, but in everything, because mm-hmm. everything became more affordable,
yep.
at least monthly payment-wise.
Yep.
What we're seeing right now is, I mean, people are hoping for interest rates to come down. The problem with that is that if they come down at this year, at the middle or end of the year, there's a 1.5 year lag time before you feel the effects. The real question here is what's going to happen to those people who are renewing their mortgages this year, next year, and the year after that have great increases coming to their monthly payments? That's not going to change. You know, one of the things people don't realize is there's three stories going on in the real estate market. They're very different stories.
Tell us.
Number one, we have the people who've been in their homes for a long time, and they're unaffected by what's happened because they haven't made the move. First-time buyers have accepted the new interest rates, and they know that they can afford less with the same monthly payment. So they've accepted buying a smaller home. So we're actually seeing a lot of activity in the first-time buyer arena because people are jumping back in and we're seeing not enough homes right now in that market. But what we also have is the stress of people who bought pre-construction, bought brand new, who 3-4 years ago thought it was going to be a great investment.
Yeah.
And now those properties are not
they're not closing
out.
Yeah.
They can't borrow the money on it, and they're being wiped out because, you know, I was told by someone, which makes a lot of sense, in our country, in Canada, the banks are very much geared towards real estate as an investment option and tool. So they'll lend money on real estate. They'll be less likely to lend on businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So people, if they want to make money, are jumping into real estate. And as a result, you know, they're getting funded in real estate. So they jumped in strong. You know, some people have 4 or 5 pre-constructions coming up.
Oh.
Yes, it's a
big
problem.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember I heard of people back in the 80s, Frank, you remember this, when they'd walk into an office, a temporary office with a temporary lease, would be the showroom, and there was an easel with a board and a diagram of the floor plan and dots.
Dots,
right?
Dots.
You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, I'm going to buy some dots. Did you ever hear that, Jack?
No, I haven't
seen
that.
Dots. They're like little red stickies.
They put the stickies on there. Yeah.
Yes, I'm buying some dots.
And
all of a sudden,
you were mentioning 89. That happened. That wiped out a lot of people because they went, you know, crazy and bought 4 or 5 properties and they couldn't close on them. So this is not something that we haven't seen. And the third silo, I mean, people who are renewing also are facing the high increases, but it's the people who bought in the last 5 years whose now their properties are no longer worth what they were, and now if they want to sell, they're going to be underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very different for very different people. So this is all happening simultaneously. But there's one more sector that really got killed. And there was a story out this week about last year, 20% of all renters did not pay their rent on time.
20% of renters?
20% of renters. So that means that all these small-time investors who own these properties are having problems. And the other thing is
20%.
One in five, yeah. The thing is that...
That's not good because they will end up on the street eventually. How difficult is it to get rid of a tenant not paying rent in Ontario?
That's the catch.
Tell me.
So the problem is by the time you get someone to the rental tribunal to complain about them not paying rent, you're looking at about 10 months of no rent.
Huh. 10 months, no rent.
10 months before you can get a hearing and get them out.
So $2,000 a month, lucky, that's 20 grand.
If you're lucky. Well, no, it's not 20, because what's happened
is, saying it's $2,000 a month times 10 is 20 grand.
You know, some of the people that we're talking about here, their mortgage went up $2,000 when they had to refinance.
Oh, yeah.
So now they can't increase the rents because the rent is a fixed figure. It's a 2.5% increase per year.
And Olivia Chow is going to raise property taxes by 9. That's fair.
Property tax goes up.
But you can't raise the price on the rent, but I can raise the price on you, the owner.
And the mortgage is going up. So these poor small investors are now facing a monthly deficit that's so huge they can't handle it. And so we're anticipating a lot of properties coming to the market to get rid of the problem and also the negative cash flow.
Interesting. Frank Leo the Lion spending some time with us this Saturday night. A little chilly out, eh? Is winter back? I don't know, but spring is in the air, and that tends to spur on some real estate interest. And it's really interesting because there really are two markets in North America, the U.S. market versus the Canadian market, and it is a tale of two cities, shall I say. But we got to pay some bills around here. Of course, entertainment, of course. Want to keep the lights on so we can continue to bring you such quality programming, shall I say, such as this, Hi-Fi Radio. It's a show about money. It's a show Jack and I produce for you. I hope you enjoy it. Stay tuned.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
Bless my heart.
Gotta love it. Alabama Shanks. See, those people who have held on to their homes forever, they don't have a problem. And I'll tell you, I think people are holding on to their homes, frankly, of the line. I see no for sale signs, or virtually no for sale signs in the city of Toronto. True or false?
There's more coming up.
Watch after
March break.
You know, it's amazing. Again, I got some U.S. statistics here, and I'm sure you see the U.S. stats. I'll give you this paper when I leave or at the end of the show. But U.S. existing home sales, annual. It's quite the chart. It tends to, so sales trading hands in the United States. Wide range. Early millennia, shall I say, you know, Y2K post, roughly 7 million homes changed hands in 2004. Then you had the financial crises and Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac and AIG and all that good stuff. The money centers closed down, shall I say. Home transactions dropped in half to 3.5 million units. Then you come back up through COVID and you see 6 million units trade hand in the United States. And then you raise interest rates and you drop down to just under 4 million units trading hands. Existing home sales is important. You want to see activity and transactions. And right now it looks like it's at the lower end of this range. What are the numbers in Canada? What was the annual high for home transactions and what's the annual low? And where are we sitting right now, Frank? Do you know offhand? I do that to Jack usually. This could be the answer. Just kidding.
There is a big difference with the U.S. and with Canada. So I don't have the exact figures, but there's more transactions going on and more need to sell here in Canada than the U.S.
Need to
because
sell.
The main difference I can tell you is that the U.S. has 30-year mortgages.
Yeah.
So when you're locked in for the
at 2% or zero,
you're there for 30 years.
We know we have clients who did just that. But do you not have images, gentlemen and friends at home? Do you not remember during the financial crises, the Buffalo News or the American News that would always spill into Canada? I'm not talking about Super Duper, baby. I'm talking about the news. And they would show you street after street in America, middle America, with for sale signs. Every other home had a for sale sign on it. Reduced, vacated.
Yeah, but those weren't for sale by owner. They were for sale by the bank. They were just trying to get them off their books at the time.
Whoever. I'm just saying the image that they gave us was all of America was for sale because they picked a street where every other home was for sale.
But there's a few things. So over the years, you know, without knowing the intricacies of each market, it's very different. So you have a 30-year mortgage. So you don't want right now in the U.S., you don't want to sell your property because you have to get a higher mortgage. You're good where you are, so they're not moving, and there's less on the market for that reason.
Because they don't have the portable mortgages that we have here.
That's right. You can port, but it's 5 years, so we have to renew here, and there's the pain, so people are unloading homes because they can't afford them. But the other thing in the U.S. that really is different is that they can walk away from a home without being sued.
Yes, no recourse.
No recourse. So even
there's recourse in Ontario.
That's right.
That's actually loan defaults on our Canadian banks is so low because there are consequences.
That's right.
You have to pay. What about Alberta? They had no recourse for a long time in the 80s, and so people were walking away,
leaving the keys.
I wonder if that's still the case.
I
don't think so either. I think they changed their legislation. Yeah. Frank, let's talk then about the condo market. What's condo worth per square foot? Has it moved? New versus existing, and we're talking in the core.
The new properties are having a big problem because what's happening, they typically are selling $250 a square foot more than the existing condos.
And then what price are they going? Are they fetching these days? I know it depends where.
It depends where. The thing is the gap is so large that before people would jump in, assuming that by the time they close, it would catch up and have a positive net worth on the property. They can unload it and sell the paper.
Right.
That's not happening now.
No.
So now, even though they're trying to build condos, they can't sell them. So projects are slowing down. There's less home being built right now because of that.
Yeah, that's a question I was going to have. So if you look at the housing shortage, it's very political now. You see it in the news, and it's gone all the way up to the feds. So it's a serious issue in Canada. You talk about housing supply coming onto the market, but there's no new building. So where does it balance in there? Are we going to be a buyer's market or seller's market over the next, 6 months really doesn't account for construction, but going forward in Canada, do you see a buyer's or seller's market for the, I'm going to say, short to medium term future?
Well, based on the amount of people coming into Canada, it's going to be a shortage of supply. There's no question about that.
Even with all the houses coming on the market. Yeah. So you talk about the people that have stress, that recently renewing, all that stuff going on.
There's more homes are going to be sold because people have to, you know, get over the stresses of the financial aspect of their mortgages, et cetera. So you have 3 years of pain going through. Once they renew all their mortgages after 3 years, then people have accepted the new rates and they can live with that. So, but that doesn't increase the quantity of homes available. So you need to have more homes coming on the market and being built, and there's not enough there.
So, Frank, let me ask you this question. You run a big business. You're the largest agent in Canada, or certainly one of the largest?
We're on top of the world. We sell the most homes in Toronto and the GTA for REMAX year after year.
Year after year, you sell the most homes. Okay. How many homes do you currently have listed?
Our inventory, we're turning them over. We're good. I mean, we're busy.
So how many homes do you have listed right now?
Right now, I would say about 110.
You have 110. So that's a decent sample size. How many of those sellers are distressed sellers? My next question is name and address. I'm kidding. How many distressed sellers would you say?
There are people who are moving because they need to. There's quite a few. I don't have a percentage only
Pull a number out of the air.
At least 30% of people are doing as a stress.
You think 30% are stressed of your clients, eh?
I'm not saying they have to sell in the sense that they can't hang on, but it's not comfortable.
We'll call them motivated sellers.
They're motivated sellers. 30%, that's serious.
You know, but it's not just real estate. It's really the cost of living has affected all of us.
Big time.
And we're feeling it in all ways. And so something has got to give. And unfortunately, what we're seeing here is a lot of multi-generational homes where parents, kids, and even sometimes grandkids living all together now. That's becoming more of a thing.
First-time home buyer, average age now?
35.
Yeah, that's what I'm sensing. And are they coming out of mom and dad's home to make that first purchase? Are they coming out of an apartment to make a first purchase?
That's coming out of a home because
they're coming from a home.
The cost of rents are huge.
It's insane.
Yeah.
When I take my dog for a walk, and this really disturbs me, these old low rises in Toronto, the yellow brick, probably built in the 50s, Frank, and they're all over Toronto. You see them. Mm-hmm. Yellow brick, low rise, maybe four stories, no air conditioning, no elevator, easy to build, and they just generate cash for the landlord. Those landlords have been sitting on them for decades, not doing a lot of betterment. Long or the short, they flip them over every month, but I walk by with my dog in some basement apartment units, and no curtains, so you can sort of look inside as my dog's squatting on their grass, which I pick up, of course. But I see 3 and 4 people in these 600 square foot apartments living.
You know why they won't move though? They're never going to move because the rents are so low.
They don't move. And again, when you move, good luck. It's just going to cost you too much money. But to see 3 and 4 people living in a small apartment, Frank, it's depressing. Life can be very difficult. Friends, it can be difficult. I'm here to help you once again. You got to save money. Work, save, invest. I don't care how you do it. You have to do it. And you have to let time work its magic. $5 a day saved and invested at 9%, which is a reasonable long-term target. $5 a day saved for 40 years is $741,000. $5 a day becomes $741,000. The sooner you start, the sooner you can compound. I'm here to help you, but you have to help yourself. Work, save, invest, live beneath your means. Stay at home with mom and dad as long as you can. First-time home buyers, savings plans are now available. We offer those. They're beyond generous. You get a tax deduction. The money grows tax-free. You take the money out tax-free. And if you decide never to buy a home, you can roll that into an RRSP, so get an RRSP boost. It's a very, very good tool, much better than taking money out of your RRSP for a first-time home buyer's plan. Jack, you can do both, can't you? You can take out home buyer RRSP and...
You can, and you can actually, I would say, contribute from your RRSP to the first home saver account as well. Make a transfer.
And you get the tax deduction if you make the transfer?
No, you already got the tax deduction.
But
you don't have to pay it back down the road.
And it grows tax-free both. You don't have to pay. Oh, that's good. That's interesting.
They made it's an excellent, excellent account.
Excellent. Frank Leo the Lion, one of the finest. Great brand. Brands matter. Reputation matters. And getting the good advice, honest advice, is so important. Price your home properly. No different in the market. I don't screw around. When I want to buy something, I buy it. And when I want to sell it, I sell it. I don't nickel and dime. Don't do that with your real estate agent. You know why? The market will wave you bye-bye. So if you're serious, then do what you need to do. And that's what this show is all about, helping you build wealth. My friends, I wish you a great weekend. I want to say thank you for spending time with us. And I look forward to spending another hour with you next weekend. Any questions? WolfgangKlein.com. All the best.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.